Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs, penned in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play, he worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As far as I know here, you're in trouble. Where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day. And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out on the field each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory, and that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it, and I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand? Little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail. I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen, but God says, write what I tell you to write. Paul wrote, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth has laid up for you. What's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross. I've got two nails in my hand. Father, I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdrawest thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, spit history in half, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win because he's on your side and one with God. Always in the majority, so walk with him and talk with him and work with him and speak together and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night and God bless you.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, This man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. Today, okay, let me give you an update. Today's podcast is titled 365 Ways to Solve One Problem. Once again, 365 ways to solve one problem. Now, many people, we all have problems sometimes. Well, we all have problems. That's just the nature of life. All right. But I was thinking that one way but a lot of people, including myself, when it comes to solving problems, a lot of people are lazy. You know, they might think of one idea or two ideas, maybe three. Sometimes they'll sit down and write out five ideas on how to solve a particular problem. But what if you sat down? Now, you can do this a couple of ways. You can brainstorm with other people, you know, one person, two people, as many people as you want. But before you brainstorm with others, is sit down, like I say, if you have a particular difficult problem to solve, sit down, because the mind is basically a muscle. At least that's the way I see it. The more you exercise it, the stronger that muscle gets, you know, including using your imagination and creative imagination. But what if you sat down and you said, you know what, because every problem, now this is my philosophy of life, every problem not only has a solution, but most problems have multiple solutions. So that's why I titled today's live stream, 365 Ways to Solve One Problem. And we'll get into the examples right after this.
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept, so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Hear the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift. The thing God gave you at birth to do, it is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you're doing, you're wasting your time. Do you hear me? You're wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times. I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I didn't have nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone. And I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called and I punched in the code and the said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this is it. I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, wanting to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It said, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This is a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back, And I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone. I call Chuck Sutton. I say, hey, man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I called Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in the dressing room on the 6th floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw in the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the 6th floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduced myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I done had this 4 pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie. Then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass. Then he went back to them jokes. And they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened.
The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just say, Lord, Lord, Lord.
And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. And they paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I had never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida, I make $300. Then I go to New York, I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful.
Okay. Anyway, today's podcast titled 365 Ways to Solve One Problem. Now, just in my program notes, which is right here on Blog Talk Radio, I've got, because that's what I'll be doing today, and maybe, well, all the weekend, writing out 365 ways to solve one problem. And it's a good mental exercise. But anyway, you can solve problems by addition, subtraction, division, multiplication. You can come up with problem-solving strategies, problem-solving partnerships. Time is a big one. You know, a lot of times when you don't think you have time, if you're among the living, you've got time. So solving problems by time, solving problems by creative imagination. And there was a book I ran across a number of years ago, all right, which I think is good for problem solving, but 365 Ways to Cook Chicken. That was the name of the book. And you think about it, you can apply that. I mean, it's one bird, one chicken, but there are 365 distinct ways that you can prepare that chicken. Fried chicken, baked chicken, broiled chicken, barbecue chicken, rotisserie chicken. That's just five right there. If you look on, hold it, let me find, if I have one handy without going to the kitchen. It looks like I might have to go to the kitchen for this one. You guys can join along with me. Oh, here it is. I found one. Okay. You might have one of these handy in your presence right now in your home. if you can, get, for those of you who like to order Chinese on occasion, I do, at least once or twice a month, I order Chinese and they bring it right to this door. And you look at, I'm on a menu. Now, there's at least 200 to 300 items, more like closer to 300 items within this Chinese menu, Chinese carryout menu that I hold in my hand. So I'm looking at, now they have appetizers, they have 12 appetizers. So think about this, you could look at it as 12 ways to earn money or 12 paychecks. So they got 12 problem solutions to problems. So they have 12 appetizers on here. They have a soup menu. They got wonton soup, egg drop soup, chicken rice or noodle soup, mixed wonton egg drop soup, hot and sour soup, vegetable soup, house special soup, and seafood soup. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So they have eight items on there. Oh, and then you may as well double that, because if they have the quart size, the pint size. All right, so they virtually, just in their soup menu, they've got 16 options. Let's see, they got a fried rice, plain fried rice, vegetable fried rice, pork fried rice, chicken fried rice, beef fried rice, shrimp fried rice, house special fried rice, and Thailand curry fried rice. Oh, now what I was on here for, I'm looking for chicken. Okay, chicken. Now before we get to the chicken menu within this menu, they have another section titled Special Chinese American Dishes. All right, so you can order fried chicken wings. They'll give you 8. And then if you just want them plain, that's 8, you know, 8.25. If you want it with plain fried rice, it's 8.75. If you want it with pork, roast pork or chicken fried rice, is $9.45. And if you want it with shrimp fried rice or house fried rice, is $9.95. So they're taking these wings, all right, and you get it's 8 that comes with it, and multiply 8 times 4, because they have the distinctives of plain, you know, by itself, with plain fried rice, with pork or chicken fried rice, or with shrimp or house fried rice. So they, you know, like I said, they multiplied by 4. Let's see if you have anything else. So that's the sub menu of the main menu of special Chinese American dishes. Now, let's poor little birds. They don't get a chance. All right, so let's go to the chicken section, and they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. They have 12 dishes that contain that the chicken is the main thing. Chicken with broccoli, mugulgai pan, chicken with mixed vegetables, chicken with snow peas, honey chicken, chicken with cashew nuts, Thailand curry chicken with onion, chicken with garlic sauce, chicken with Szechuan style, Kung Pao chicken, Hunan chicken, chicken with black bean sauce. Now, I said there's 12. So that's 12. Now, my favorite Chinese dish is sesame chicken. That's not even on this section of the menu, of the chicken section of the menu. That's in another part of the menu. But, and then even with the chicken menu, they have four distinctions within this menu, because you can order a quart, which is $11.25, or a pint, which is $7.75. All right. Now, my favorite Chinese American food, because in reality, none of this is real Chinese food. This is Chinese American food, but we just call it Chinese food. But that's a whole nother podcast. All right, so they have combination platters where I can get sesame chicken or a lunch special, because at this particular carryout, which runs from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., all right, you can order a lunch special of $7.95. So my favorite is, and sometimes I might order two or three, I'll mix up, I might get Egg Foo Young lunch special. I put it this way, one of their lunch specials is big enough to feed two, possibly three people. All right. So they give you a bunch of $7.95. But in any event, so they've taken, and of course they have, you know, other meat items on there. But what I'm getting to is, and that's why I named today's podcast, 365 ways to solve one problem. So if you've got a difficult problem, or maybe it appears to be an impossible problem, you don't know how you're going to solve it. All right. Sit, don't panic. Don't freeze yourself with fear and get paralyzed by fear where you do absolutely nothing. Sit down, because if the disaster hasn't happened yet, you already got one strategy working for you, time. So sit down, relax, take out a sheet of paper or on your phone or desktop or laptop, whatever you use, and sit down. And now, once again, you have some operations here. You can solve things by addition, division, multiplication, subtraction. There's strategies, there's partnerships, they all. We all have a whole bunch of tools. Sit down and think of 365 ways to solve that one specific problem. Now, you might get up to 5 ideas or 10 ideas and freeze up. That's okay. Get on the phone, get online, whatever, get on Facebook, whatever, and, okay, find somebody else and ask them if they can help you come up with some strategies to solve that one particular. And they might come up with, well, they might come up with one or two strategies. If you haven't written those down, write those down. If they come up just with one or two, all right? Some person might help you come up with maybe 10 or 15 or 20 more strategies, right? If they're different, write those down. All right. Somewhere along the line, I'm suspecting you will come up with 365. Now, if you come up with some solid ideas, because many times you just need one, sometimes you might have to combine ideas. You know, well, maybe this solution A, it'll work. Like, you know what, peanut butter and jelly, who would have thought? It works. So, you know, sit down, like I said, if you got a seemingly impossible problem or whatever, and go from there. Now, that's what I like about the Nine Hands audio. That's why I play it so much, because within those nine, well, which in reality was probably bare minimum about 18 people. excuse me, you don't know, no, 18 hands, nine trucks, two people in each truck, 18 people, 36 hands. I'm figuring that was the bare minimum. So that's how they were able to, in my opinion, get that building, to get that house that went from, I mean, think about it. It's the neighbors that were looking at that house on the daily. And nobody in that neighborhood purchased that house. And the guy who bought the house, he, if you think about it, just, you know what? I've got friends. That's an idea. And he called them up. We don't know how many phone calls he did make. And that's another thing, because once you get an idea, and it doesn't have to be an elaborate idea. It can be a really simple, simple idea. But you might have to execute it 365 times. You might have to make 365 phone calls till you reach the right person. So for some people, that's frustrating. Matter of fact, if you haven't seen the movie Boiler Room, particularly people that out there that are entrepreneurs, Boiler Room, who was in that? Mia Peebles was in it. Giovanni Ribisi's in it. I can see his face, but I can't. Well, anyway, what Boiler Room is about takes place during the go-go years of Wall Street. And these guys are stockbrokers. And it is not uncommon for a stockbroker to make 700 phone calls a day. 700 of them. But, you know, that's part of the job of a Wall Street broker is telemarketing. They got to get on that phone and they've got to call. They're playing the law of averages. And for some people can't take that. You know, they just can't. The thought of making that many calls, but there's a payoff. You know, it's not uncommon for those who last through it. You know, Wall Street brokers can make 60. I mean, well, six figures. Some make seven figures a year. But they put in out, once again, you know, you're talking about seven. Now, a lot of them have assistants to make those calls. All right. And then with the technology out here, you know, some of them are just the good old-fashioned, because the robocall thing, they have laws, you know, laws on the books against that now. But anyway, Boiler Room, check it out. If you want ideas on that. So if you're looking for a solution to a particular problem, particularly if it's dealing with money, I would say sit down, take out a sheet of paper, and come up with 365 ways to do it. Now, you might be able to come up with five today, or just chip away at it. Even if you just come up with one fresh idea a day, every day, you know, within a year, you've got 365, but then, of course, you got to execute. I don't recommend that. Like, for me, I'm working on one now. So, essentially, I'm looking at how many can I come up with by, really, let's say, tomorrow evening. And I will be calling people picking their brain. I'll be doing that. Okay, so look at a Chinese menu in a different way. Anyway, that's my rant for today. Let's see what's happening, if anybody's got any trending topics, news, what have you. Robin, are you available?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Anything on? Okay. Anything on the agenda, trending topics, news, what have you?
No, not really.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Delmar's not here today. He's available.
Yeah, comment.
Oh, Delmar's
here.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yes, Delmar.
I got a comment. This is a statement I picked up from somewhere. I don't remember who, but it goes like this. It's right along the line of what you're saying. When you change the way you look at things or a thing, that thing changes. So as you're saying, the simple stuff we see every day people are doing is because they're looking at it different. Like you say, a chicken wing is not just something to eat. It's a fortune to those who are, as you say, use a different way to serve it up and create wealth using something as simple as a chicken wing. And I've been working on the idea of one of the presentations. Take something as common as toilet paper, which we don't want to think about, but everybody uses, and their company is making a fortune off of toilet paper. But to them, it's not toilet paper. It's wealth. It's money. So when you change the way you look at a thing or things, that thing changes, and your results will be quite different. And I appreciate what you're sharing today, Elliot, about that. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you broke it down like that, because you're right. Now let me give you a little bit more information on Chinese American carryouts in the United States. On average, all right, number one distinction: most Chinese carryout restaurants are mom and pop operations. They're family businesses.
Yeah, that's right.
We've all gone in them, and basically we see 2, 3, maybe 4 generations of people in there working in that business, including, you know, a family member that, you know, they were way ahead of the curve. They were delivering to our doors way before this age we're living in right now, which is called the gig economy. You know, where almost anybody will deliver. They were doing it decades before in this country, before, you know, the age we live in right now. But on average, the average Chinese-American carryout, they take in $1,100,000 a year in revenue. All right? That's a mom-and-pop business. You don't see anybody in there with a suit on. No tie. I don't know what their educational level is, but and they're selling. And let's go with the chicken wing. Okay, some people look at the chicken wing as just something to eat. Okay, they look at it just on the menu. That's what I'm saying. If you got a menu in your home, take a look at it. But look at it how they look at it. All right, that chicken wing. Which is a resource, because I like the way you put that, Delmar. Take your resources and turn it into wealth. So they've taken the chicken wing, all right, let's start with the chicken wing, because you got different types of chicken, what they call them, buffalo wings. So, you know, you got all different types of that, or you can get the plain wing, with 5 or 6 or 7 different sauces, honey mustard sauce, barbecue sauce, garlic sauce. So, do you want 4? Do you want 8? Do you want 20? So they've taken the chicken wing. I'm not even getting to the rest of the bird yet. You know, with chicken fried rice and all this other stuff. So they've taken the chicken wing, and every menu on it, they're all simple menu items that we all eat, we all have in our house. And to be honest about it, Most of you probably might cook a better chicken wing than them.
Ain't no
they've turned it into they turn into paychecks. What did you say, Robin?
Ain't no thing but a chicken wing.
Well, that's how they look at it. That's how they look at it.
Yeah. But big money.
So,
big money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're making big money off of chicken. You know, I know there's a place back in D.C., I was going through, it was about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. I was going through Southeast D.C., Washington, D.C., and I saw, we all seen Chinese convenience stores in the hood. So I was passing through, this part of Southeast D.C., and in that section of D.C., which that particular neighborhood was what we would call the hood. So, I saw a convenience store there, a Chinese convenience store, and it was a line out the door. We're talking about breakfast time. And what they had was apparently they had, the line was neighborhood people, but they had, apparently they serve a good down-home soul food breakfast. So one of the strategies that they use, and I believe just like they have Amway meetings and Mary Kay meetings, I believe somewhere, because like China, depends on what China you're in. All right, I mean, it's 11:27 p.m., a.m. where I'm at. All right. I believe, like someplace in like Peking, because Peking's new name is Beijing. I believe somewhere in Beijing, the meeting's over now, but like a couple of hours ago, 3 hours ago, somewhere in Beijing, China, or maybe somewhere in Vietnam, about 4 hours ago, there was a meeting, an opportunity meeting, where they're selling, you can make this much off of selling chicken wings. And one of their strategies is, and I like people to chime in on this who are on the call here today, or people that are, press one to chime in on this, is because when I went in that place, when I've gone into other places that are basically run by Asian, Chinese, Vietnamese, what have you, they're not cooking the food. Now, they'll cook when it comes to their dishes, they'll cook them. But for this particular day, and I'm sure they had the morning routine with this facility this day, they own the place, they own the cash register, but the people cooking the food are the old school black folks who know how to cook the grits, the bacon, the scrapple, whatever you like soul food for breakfast, that's who's cooking the food. All right. Now, I don't know, I don't know if the youngins are coming up cooking like that, old school style, but I'm sure in their opportunity meetings, they're discussing, I would really like to see black folks do that. Have opportunity meetings on, because like I say, they God knows how much they make on breakfast every day. But a line out the door. Anyway, so, Delmar, you broke that down beautifully. We had to start looking at our neighborhoods in a different light. We had to start doing it. So, anything else you guys want to put out there?
Well, on the same note, we change the way you look at tiny housing. It changes. And that's what we're going to be teaching people, to look at it differently. Or housing, shelter, period. Look at it differently. Is it something everybody needs, or is it something you can leverage and make your life better for your family? That's the thought.
Okay. I need to put that in my notes. Look at look at things differently.
That's a different thing we're looking at. It's a problem. One of the greatest opportunities in the world comes out of problems.
Yeah, Tony Robbins would call that reframing. And but you're right. You have, if you take a look at, because here's how I look at tiny houses. I'm looking at a tiny house. Let's say, number one, you're cutting out 80% of the fat or 80% of a house that you don't use. Because you can live in a 10-room house and it's fully furnished. But are you living in all 10 rooms? Just because it's furnished doesn't mean you're living in it. So that's the first thing. So you're cutting out 70 to 75% of the house that you don't use or live in, don't live in. Number two, your monthly maintenance will be dramatically lowered and or in some cases eliminated. Because if you got like a 1,000-square-foot house, and you need a roof on there, you better be, if you don't have $10,000 to $25,000, every few years, you know, for a replacement or whatever, you know, that costs money. It's two things that are settling down a lot of people: the house note, because you know, with maintenance, you can end up spending more in maintenance than the actual cost of the house. The next thing is, if you build a tiny house, all right, and it's debt free from the get go, then you're not free. I mean, you freed yourself up, or prevented yourself from being enslaved to bankers with a 30-year mortgage. You know, there are people that, you know, if you get a mortgage loan at 30. Who says you're going to live to see it at 90, by the time it's 90? There's a lot of people who got mortgage loans yesterday that will, and they might be even younger than 30, that will not live long enough because they will be stressed out in rush hour traffic and fighting, you know, now have a heart attack or a stroke because they just stress out. Just get rid of that burden from the beginning or prevent it. Build it and be done with it. I call them hardware houses also. With a hardware store, anybody of any income level can go in and buy most items in a hardware store. A Section 8 person can go inside a Home Depot and Lowe's. You do not need a Section 8 person who goes into Home Depot or Lowe's, just like a billionaire can go in Home Depot and Lowe's, can buy practically any item in Home Depot or Lowe's or Menards or Ace Hardware Store, any hardware store. They don't need to fill out a loan application. They don't have to get government help. They don't need to go to social services. We're talking about building, what, once again, this is something I coined, a hardware storehouse. Everything you need is within reason, and you just have to have the know-how, or partner up with somebody who has the know-how on how to construct that house. Obviously, you won't be building a mansion.
Amen.
But matter of fact, she passed a few years ago. Aretha Franklin, the late, great singer Aretha Franklin, when she passed away, you know, they had an open casket for her and for viewing. And over the 2 or 3 days that, you know, her body was available for viewing, they changed her outfit probably about two times. All right, you know, Queen of Soul. But then, now here's the telling part, and I hate to get more with this, but I'm making a point. At the end, you know, they followed her all the way to the graveyard where, or that, I guess it was her crypt. And here's a woman who had a net worth of at least $80 million, known globally, worldwide. But this woman who left in a state of at least $80 million, when they rolled that casket into the crypt, which was surrounded by other crypts, it was just a little small space. So wherever you're sitting right now, you're just in one space. You can't occupy 10 rooms at one, even if you got a family. You know, do you use all those rooms? Now, once again, hold, live in, not use. Because where I'm at, because my mother passed away, I had to take over this particular house. It's 10 rooms. There's some. I'm looking at a room right now. I'm in another room looking at it within the dining room. I'm in the living room. I've been here 10 years. I have never sat down at the dining room in this house.
Yeah.
Never.
My sister and her husband were consumers. They had many cars and trucks and boats and recreational vehicles, you know. And I would say to my brother-in-law, you can only drive one car at a time, you know. And they had a lot of opulent furniture, a lot of rooms, you know, and
right.
You have your pick of, you can sit in the chair, the chaise lounge, the sofa, the love seat, but your butt can only occupy one space at a time, living or dead. So, you know, the rest is at what they say these days, extra, all that's extra.
Right.
And it really doesn't take all that, because you got this big old space and you running electricity, you're heating rooms, you got lights, you got all this current running through space that you're not even physically occupying. One person. So, you know,
right.
It's just a matter of how you think. So as a man thinketh, so is he.
Right. Right. So but Dumbo said something.
Yeah. Luke 12:15, I believe, Robin. Jesus addresses the concern of covetousness. And he said, beware of it, because a person's life is not about the abundance of what they possess. And yet, the pressure of darkness has gotten people caught up in it, I think. As you say, how many vehicles and how many rooms, or even with men, a preacher, how many suits? And you can't wear one at a time. And as you said, L.A., at the end, you can't take nothing with you. You can't take nothing. You talk about the change of clothes. Those shrouds, they didn't change their clothes. Just cut it and put it on top and take it off. Put it on top, take it off. There's no full uniform or dress. They don't put those people on clothes so stiff. They just cut it
right.
And lay it on top and push it down on the side where it looks like they're wearing it. So all of this is, like you say, is so much hype. And people are caught up in it. It's being promoted every day on TV and social media everywhere. And people think that's what life is about, and it's not. Thank you.
Right. Right. Because now they had her casket like open all the way. You can see, you know, with the change of shoes. But I think most of what I've heard is, you know, if it's a body viewing, it's, they don't even put put shoes on most, you know, people in the, you know. Because what, you know, the dead person doesn't really have any use for shoes. So,
they call it a shroud.
But,
they call it a shroud.
Okay.
Cut
all
the,
right,
dead,
well,
cut the body.
Okay. Well, so that, you know, like I say, it's, now, for some people have a family. Most people do. But there's strategies for that too. Of course, but you know, here's the thing: everybody's got different. People got different lifestyles and people goals, dreams, and what have you. I mean, some people they want to. I'm trying to find that audio. Well, you know what? Like you said, Delmar, they've got to. You got to look at things differently, or be forced to.
Imagine living in a space that measures a mere 168 square feet, more than 14 times smaller than the average American home. Well, it is here inside this tiny house where the proud owners are discovering that less is so much more.
Well, in the past year, we've managed to save everything that I earn. We use my husband's income for our living expenses, and I've been teaching public school, so that's about $3,000 a month that we've put in the bank this year.
Hari, her husband Carl, and their two young kids, Archer and Ella, recently celebrated their one-year anniversary in their tiny house. After losing their 1,500-square-foot home to financial struggles, the couple took matters into their own hands, literally. They built this space themselves with just $13,000 in materials. Their goal? To become debt-free and save enough to one day build a new home, mortgage-free. And so far, they're right on track.
Things are going really well with the next project. We're going to build a 16 by 24 unit to begin with, and then we'll branch off of that and add bedrooms.
You may remember seeing this family on The Anderson Show earlier this year, where I joined them on stage. Fascinated by their story, our financially fit team flew down to Virginia to see for ourselves and learn ways we can all downsize.
How are you?
Hey, really good.
You. Hey there. Living in the tiny house has taught me that we don't need much at all to be happy, and that getting the things that we need can actually be a lot of fun.
Can you get me a bowl and some scissors?
The family's fruit and vegetable garden lets them eat healthier, cut down on their carbon footprint, and slash their grocery bill by as much as 30%. Hari has also been upcycling, as she calls it, taking something old and breathing new life into it.
My favorite upcycling project was the rugs I made for the house. I took old sheets, flat sheets, and crocheted them into rugs. They're beautiful, and they fit the house a lot nicer than if we had gone and bought something new from the store.
The couple also recently switched jobs, not for more money, but more happiness. Carl is enjoying better working conditions at a new restaurant, and Hari left teaching to pursue a career in nonprofit. Being able to afford a career that you love and pursuing a passion rather than a paycheck, they've learned, is just an added benefit to having savings and no debt.
I'm probably taking a 25 to 30% cut in my salary, which is going to enable me to have more time to actually build the house and save money because I'll be the contractor.
It's really a great feeling to be able to make a decision like that, not based on money, but based on what we want to be doing with our time.
The kids also seem keen to the transition. Mom and Dad are happy to report fewer requests for video games or toys now that Ella and Archer are busy playing outdoors on their 3-acre property.
We play down by the creek and up at the big tree up there where the swing is. We play with our neighbors and ride bikes.
There's a lot of different things they can do with their time besides play with plastic toys and get online.
They've really just embraced it wholeheartedly. You can't stop them from having a good time outside.
Still another lesson, when you downsize, it helps to have a support system.
There's such a wealth of knowledge in our community, and that helps us a lot. And having that support makes it like we're doing it together. Moving to the country has given us a lot of things, not just the tiny house.
So, what do you think? What are your thoughts about living in a tiny house? Would you ever do it? Connect with me on Twitter at Farnoosh and use the hashtag FinFit for Yahoo Finance. I'm Farnoosh Tarabi.
Okay, they start, all right, they had let's get the optics on this. Man and wife, two children, small children at the time, but not toddlers. So they were living in a 1,500 square foot house on the grid, meaning, you know, they had an electric bill, a water bill. They're in Florida, so it does get cold down here in the wintertime occasionally, but not ice cold in most cases. But that you do have a cold snap here and there. So we had to warm up the house during those days. But $1,500 mortgage taxes, and they lost it. So they went, I'm going to just play this portion up because I get the square footage right. So they start off with $1,500, and they got kicked off the grid due to inflation and economy crunch. Hold on, I'm going to play this. I got to get square footage off this.
The biggest thing it gets.
Imagine living in a space that measures a mere 168 square feet, more than 14.
Okay, so they went from 1,500 square feet, okay, where on a critical mass basis, that's where a lot of Americans are. And they went to 168 square feet, four of them. Now, one of the things in that audio that I go by, and this is why I like the tiny house thing, is I pay attention to women. If the woman's happy, or as they say, if mama's happy, everybody's happy. If mama's mad, nobody's happy. So if you even look on YouTube, that's this one audio. If you look on YouTube, there's quite a few women that have solo built or with their boyfriend or their husband, they have built their tiny houses. It's not a fad. This has been going on for well over a decade now. All right, now, so they went from 1,500 square feet, all right, where I'm sure her and her husband probably got in some arguments about finances on how we're going to make ends meet at 1,500 square feet. All right. So then they went down to 168 square feet or 86 square feet, whatever it is, and four of them. And now she's happy because they were able to take her husband's, his income. You know, they spent about, what they said, $13,000 on materials. In another article, they said $11,000. But let's go with the higher figure, $13,000 of his money, okay, shopping on Craigslist, going to a flea market here and there, and they built a debt-free house of that, you know, 186 square feet, debt-free. They don't have to worry about the arguments about the mortgage. The arguments about rent were done. They might have bickerings about other topics, but when it comes to the roof over their head, that evaporated because he built from scratch. No mortgage, no credit cards. What I call hardware homes. If you can't build your structure from what you can get out of a hardware store, cash and carry, you can't afford it. Next thing, because, you know, the kids, they look forward. They were thinking forward. Well, we got these kids now. Everybody's happy and comfortable now in 186 square feet. All right. They bought, what, 2 or 3 acres of land. And then the next house that they built, mom and pop now, 384 square feet, 16 by 24 square feet, 24 by 16. That's 384 square feet. 384 square feet, everybody had more room, they had more comfort, they had zero debt, plus they're on 2 or 3 acres of land, which means they can grow some of their own food. I mean, that much, you can put an acre of land, you can put 20 to 40 houses on it, depends on how you build them, on an acre of land. We're talking about regular-sized houses with infrastructure, sidewalks, the whole 9 yards. So they had less, it might sound crazy, but less truly is more. And the wife, she was still happy. And she was able to put her whole paycheck from a school teaching job, $3,000 a month, into the bank. So within 12 months, they got a cash reserve of $36,000. In 4 years, because 4 years goes by quick, over $100,000 bank account. That's why I love the idea of tiny houses. You can, matter of fact, you can work on the fry machine at McDonald's if you live tiny. And in actuality, we really all do as far as space goes. But we get into trouble when we start buying more, and this is everybody, buying more than what we actually need. Because in 186 square feet with four people, all right, you gotta, we're watching Netflix on our phones or on our laptops or our desktops, but that's fine. Because on your phone, your desktop, and your laptop, you're not in debt. I watch Netflix. I don't watch it every night, but when I do, at least once a week I watch Netflix. You know, I watch it on the phone's paid for. If I move or anything, like, I can carry my phone with me and watch a movie or a TV show or whatever. All right. Now, the next house that they built, debt-free, 384 square feet. Now, that's big enough. Now, if you want a nice big flat screen in there, you can do that. If you want a regular-sized refrigerator in your home at 384 square feet is still, is considered, here, and there's no hard and fast definition of tiny house, but the tiny house, my definition, which I picked up from other people, is 399 square feet or less. That's tiny. But with 384 square feet, that's pretty roomy. You can have a big flat screen TV in there and some other luxury items in there. And it can be, depending on, you know, how you decorate and everything, it can be like really chic, like Beata's not on here today. She was a guest on our Monday radio program out of Jacksonville, Florida. And Beata's got like a really nice, she's got a good eye for decorating. She's got a real nice, the current tiny house that she's in that she and her son converted from a shed is 320 square feet, but she really laid it out nice. Almost magazine photographs shut nice. I mean, it's really nice. So those are some of the reasons why I like tiny houses. Anyway, but the biggest thing for me is the house is not going to burden you down in high debt and expenses that can drag out for 20, 25, 30 years. And God, boy, if you refinance the house. And matter of fact, we're going to offer a series on, because the first go-to solution or strategy that a lot of people go to when they're thinking about, you know, we got this house, it needs some repairs, but the house has got a lot of equity in it. A lot of people's first and only go-to strategy is, well, refinance the house or get it. No, build something and sell it, or build something and rent it out, or do the combination of the two. Use that money on other newly created structures to fix up a house that needs fixing up. But stay out of the borrowing game. That, anyway, that's my strategy. Anyway, 866, your mic is open. 866 area code. Okay, they might have stepped away from the office. Robin, you still there?
Yep, still here.
I have a question. All right, now you have a lot of young adults, 20, 30-something, and let's say they're paying $1,500 a month rent. And you tell them about, well, why don't you take that $1,500 and build you a house?
Yep.
Now, in a lot of cases, you'll probably get some pushback. But any suggestions on how you might not get, you know, how they can, you can possibly word things where they can, I guess, some things they're going to have to, you're going to have to actually demonstrate it, but.
Well, actually, watch this. If you follow what God and Jesus did, they were able to accomplish almost anything that they wanted with and from and for the people. Just by addressing their needs. And so when we appeal to people's needs, right, everyone's going to need their housing, blah, 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 but they have pressing housing costs are rising, rents rising, you know, all of that. And so if you appeal to, if you, it's down to relationship again. So if you have the meet and greets and you learn the people's circumstances, then you appeal to what their needs are. So you don't have to overcome or sell or persuade or convince. Does that make sense? And so you actually have a great system for that with the podcast and the radio show and the two-way communication and the meet and greet.
Right, matter of fact, let's put a pin on that. I'm gonna come right back to you. I want to play this.
Tonight we are taking action for some neighbors who are living a nightmare after squatters moved in on their block.
Always taking action for you.
We begin tonight with neighbors outraged over squatters taking claim of an abandoned school building.
Yeah, and they want something done about this problem ASAP at the old Benjamin Franklin School. It's bringing more crime, more filth into their community.
7 Action News reporter Kim Russell has more.
To the passerby, this is an old vacant school in Detroit. To some, this building is home.
They had a bed set up, and they got their personal effects on there.
To Steve Townsend, who lives across the street, it's a nuisance. He walked in, like many do every day, at this old, unlocked school to show me what he's dealing with.
Wow, that's gross.
They don't have a toilet. The floor is the toilet.
As you go room to room in this school, you can see that it's literally been turned into a dumping ground. People who live in this neighborhood say it needs to be secured so that everyone is safe.
So in that box right there, if we lifted open that box, you would see that that's the toilet.
Wow.
Because I lifted open that box.
I bet you regretted that.
Police tell me they've been called here 3 times since October for robbery, burglary, and to find criminals living here. Townsend works as a police officer and sees the crimes.
There's been people fighting in the streets out in front that come out of this building, drug deals, and just all kinds of mayhem.
So who owns this building? A spokesperson for Detroit Public Schools says over the summer, Detroit businessman Dennis Capolinos bought it. We went to his popular Greektown restaurant, Nicky's, for comment. We were told he's not available.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, a guy came by to do an assessment on the building.
Now, this happened on Detroit's west side, and police are calling this a home invasion. But some people are seeing it a little differently. The victim did not want to talk on camera, but a few family members of the suspects did. Last night, the lady of this house came home to one hell of a surprise. There was one heck of a party in her pad. But she never got the invite. 3 men had helped themselves to all of her gin and her Seagram's Happy Juice. And these cats went crazy. They cooked up all her food, crab legs, shrimp. They even had a bird in the oven. Can you believe it? And while they were fixing their feast, they were high as a kite on the chronic. Bold, huh? She screamed.
And they ran out the house.
Then the lady called the law. According to the police report, the victim says her house was a hot mess. A bunch of her stuff was stolen, including some very sentimental things. And the dudes dining at her dining room table were fellas with familiar faces. She told detectives 2 of them live right next door. Now, that's worse than a nosy neighbor.
Your brothers were in there?
Yeah, one of them.
But sis here says it's not his fault. He was just a guest.
Somebody was squatting in that house. The guy that was in there, he was squatting already, so he was inviting people over as if he was living there.
If you're a homeowner, renting a property or whatever, you don't leave your home abandoned for 3-4 months.
Well, the woman tells Fox 2, she was there last Tuesday, and everything was intact.
This is Detroit, Michigan. This is the hungry capital of the world, and we will come in there and squat in your house if you're not home.
It was like a chill spot. Wait, what? I mean, if you squat in the house, and somebody invites you over to smoke some weed, you're going to be right next door.
I don't know what you think about all this right now, but these people believe she's to blame, and she should have known better than to ever, ever leave her house alone for too long.
Stay on your property for your copper come up missing.
Now, that gentleman says he would never, ever do anything like that, but other people do. 2 guys were arrested last night, but the other guy, he ran before the police got there. You know, the saddest thing about all this is you should be able to leave your house as long as you want to, and everybody should just leave it alone. By the way, that lady is looking for another place to live. I'm Andrea Isom on The Edge.
There is a squatting. Now, the people who squatted in this house, they did what they did and left. But there are other squatters who they're old. And you can call the police, and when the police get there, the police are not, it's a civil matter. They can't help you. So I'm looking at the common denominator, which is rampant in this country, is just a lot of people do not know how to build their own debt-free house and using what we call social capital. That's what Abiding Faith Housing Ministries, that's the foot portion. That puts the feet to It's My House, the DIY Housing TV. That puts the feet to it, where we the action steps. So we have our first meet, eat, and greet this coming Tuesday in Jacksonville, Florida. Now, we'll have other markets open, but right now we're, you know, we just got started. We've only done three programs in Jacksonville, but we've got good responses each and every time we've done the a broadcast on there. But our main objective is teaching people how, and the easiest thing to learn how to build, it builds small. Okay, starting off with the fundamentals, something where you don't have to go get a mortgage, you don't have to go to social services, you just have to build with some friends and on family. If you don't have friends or family, that's one of the things we're doing, is we're building a community. First week, we started with four, then it went to five, first hour. Then the second hour we did, it went to 10, actually 12, because within the 10, we got two additional reservations. And then Monday, we got an additional five. So, and then I put things in terms of hands. So we've got about 50 hands, 40 to 50 hands that we're up to. And then Monday, and then what we're looking to do this every day. So particularly we form a new Suzu every day. So we've been getting, we get enough from radio on that. So, but yeah, that's, I believe that it, because the people who raided that house like that, the squatters, if they had their own, they're busy maintaining their home instead of going and squatting. And, I mean, the one good thing about that story is they came in, they broke in, they stayed for a few days, and then they left. All right. But there are a lot of people that they can sit there for months or even years because they're waiting on the legal system, but the police, unless there's a clear case of breaking and entering, It's particularly in these larger metropolitan areas, it's hard to get them out.
So, and then also, if they are committing crimes, and so I heard that they said that they were smoking weed. You can call the police and report any criminal activities that they have going on there.
Now, Robin, smoking weed now, like in Washington, D.C., it's legal now to smoke in D.C. Where I'm at in Polk County, Florida, the weed shop is 5 minutes away from the house.
Yeah, I realize that, but in some places, well, what my point is that, yes, you might have to wait civilly, but if they're doing criminal acts, you can get them out sooner or immediately. And then this is what I say, squat back.
Could be dangerous.
Yes, but watch this. You take you nine friends, okay? You get Craig, Bubba, Huey, and them. And you all go over there, right? And you have someone who's licensed to carry, okay? And you go over there, and you occupy, and jack the house back. Yeah. And because most of the time, when you show up with a gang of people and you're armed, and you just go up in there, move up in there, they'll leave. Yep.
No.
And then once you get in there, right, you have the stand your ground law working for you once you get back in your own property. And now the law works in your favor because you own it. And you're there, right? So if they make any movement towards you, you can now say, I was afraid for my life. You give them the warning to leave, and if they step towards you, you're being attacked. So, I mean, you still can manipulate and take control of the situation. Oh, yes, you can. Oh, yes, you can.
Yeah, well, that strategy is worth food for thought.
Comment, hello?
Yeah, I'm here. We can hear you.
Yeah, want to follow up on something Robin said, God and me. Now, my whole approach to all of this and everything in my ministry, you listen to the solutions that people are giving, and civilization has left God out. And if people want to do what they want to do without God, it's not going to work. Get out. I'm going to get out your way. You go ahead. But I'm trying to assist people who recognize, as Robert said, what are our needs according to God, not according to what the world or the media is saying. They're promoting this big house, all the expensive parts, this stuff every day. But those are not needs. Those are things that people just decide they want because they see it, and it's a market in such a way to appeal to human vanity. Not that it's wrong, but again, the person who is doing it say, hey, look at this. So primary, instead of standing your ground, think, excuse me, hopefully people who are looking for a life that aligns itself with what God has designed for us, and they're more willing to follow that than to get into a confrontation over something, again, they don't need, but it's been put there as a ploy to manipulate your beliefs that you need all this. So say with God's perspectives, excuse me, is more productive. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's take a matter of fact, since you brought the squat back strategy, because when I had my squat, I didn't do that. Mainly because this particular person had a child, little girl at the time, 7, 8 years old. So I stayed. Now, when I went to the house, I went with 4 or 5 people or more, you know, when we're doing, you know, repair work, and then we leave. So I come in deep, leave deep. But I never stayed at the house. Although it was my house, I would stay at friend's house, or I go to another town that was nearby, stay there, what have you. So let me throw this out, ask you this. Minus the gun part, all right, scenario you got, because the thing is, you know, when you're dealing with a female squatter, a female squatter, and you got a female squatter with a little girl, because all you need is the accusation that so-and-so touched me, typically the police arrest first and investigate second. How do you deal with that? Squatting on the squat.
So like I said, no guns, squatting on the squatter. You just take a whole gang of people up in there and just occupy. Sit on the couch, sit on the floor, cook, eat. Play your music, talk on the phone, play dominoes, fire up some blunts, you understand? Play some dominoes, slap some tonk, occupy, and just be in there, and it will be so uncomfortable for her that she will just leave. They would.
Sounds good. That would have been a – because what I would have done is –
just take a whole gang of people and just
right.
And 9, 10, 20 people and just
if they need to use the shower,
have someone go and take a shower, use the bathroom, stank it all up, have someone be sleeping in the bed, laying on the couch, occupy the whole place. That's what I would do.
I got just a visual of somebody sleeping in the bathtub.
Okay.
You know what? That sounds like a, all right, that sounds like a nice legal way to do it where they would just be uncomfortable.
They would be uncomfortable and outnumbered, and they would just leave. And you don't even have to have any conversation or confrontation with them. As a matter of fact, she'll probably would be going off, and then everybody else around her don't even engage with nothing that she's saying. And then,
right.
Watch this. If she becomes loud and unruly, then you can call the police because now, she's disturbing the peace. You understand?
Well, this person had the police on speed dial. But that's when she was going one-on-one.
You
but that's one-on-one.
You can flip the script. You understand?
Right.
If there's a gang of people sitting around and she's the only one that's going off, right?
Right.
And then you're the homeowner, you call the police. Sir, not only is she trespassing, but she's sitting here, blah, blah, blah. And you got all these witnesses. We're sitting here eating, we're playing cards. With all these people here, ain't nobody disturbing the peace, officer, but her. And they're going to take her butt right on out of there. What?
That's a good strategy. That's a good strategy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a good strategy. Very good strategy.
And absolutely no one is allowed to say one word to the chick. You won't have to. And
right.
That, and I guarantee that would drive that chick crazy. And she would, you know how she got defiant with you? It's my house. She would have been cussing
right.
y'all out and raising such a ruckus and such a fuss. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then at
good
that
strategy.
Point, you call the police and say, angry black woman, I'm afraid for my life. Okay? And then pull a Baker Act. I'm not sure if she's got mental health issues or not, but I'm afraid. And if you mention that, they have to respond and take her in just for observation.
Right.
So you got to bake. You can Baker Act someone. I mean, you can't take control of the situation.
Well, Well, you brought up those strategies would have worked back a decade ago, or even now. But I didn't know anybody. Well, I didn't know you back then, so.
Yeah.
Those are good. So people out there, if you got a squatter, move
straight up there,
people
squat
in.
Back. Squat back. Y'all sit up in
squat
there
back.
And just occupy. And no one engage. You don't say one word to that woman. And then when she gets unruly and loud and blah, blah, then now they're disturbing the peace.
Right.
Okay. And that loud and unruly behavior, I'm not sure. I believe, and you can say it, I believe that there might be mental health something going on. And you can say that if you know what, if someone is acting all irate and stuff like that and aggressive, I would certainly believe that there's mental health involved. And so when you say that automatically Baker Acts them, and the police have to respond and take her in for observation for her own safety.
Laura, I wish I would have known the nine friends strategy. Yeah, that nine friends would have worked. What you talking about? Nine friends squad, and then have a day crew and a night crew.
I would take 18 to 20 people, and I would have a day crew, a night crew. I would have a crew.
I
would have
bought them sleeping bags.
And then
there's something to eat for everybody around the clock.
Oh my God! Okay, have a big old pot of gumbo on the stove and some greens all the time. Somebody's always in the bathroom, and the hot water's always run out. You know.
Oh yeah, with that many people in the house, yeah, you won't have no hot water ever.
I'm just saying, you know, someone to just affect that, and you make it very, very uncomfortable for that person.
Rob, I think you just invented a side hustle for us.
Anybody who's got squatters? Yeah, we're squat
less
busters.
Less expensive than lawyers.
Squat busted. Matter of fact, you really can call us, because we will. That will solve the problem. I will personally call.
Robin, I'm serious. You done just created a side hustle for us. That, we can sell the business out of that. Because there's a lot of people that they go hire a lawyer, and a lawyer might charge you $10,000, and, not for quick results.
The legal system. And he's not
right,
going to give you any.
The legal system's slow.
And I just gave you strategies that are legal.
Those are all legal.
You can manipulate a legal situation and get her up out of there, outside of the legal system that they want to force you into.
All right. That's one example with a house that, now, what about if it's like a duplex or a four-unit apartment building? You don't live there. You've rented out that space to them. What's your strategy for that?
Okay, so they are on a lease, so that would be like an eviction, and you would have to go.
No!
I just got it. So I would not. If I had a multiplex or property for rent, I would not enter into a landlord-tenant situation. I would create a club or some sort of organizational something in which they would have to become a member. And then they pay their fees to the member, which would include them living space, access to these quarters and blah, 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 blah. So that the minute that they don't pay their membership fees, they have to leave. And there's no eviction process that I have to go through. That's how I would do that, so that I wouldn't even be in that position. Does that make sense to you?
Right.
Yep. Memberships, passwords, clubs. Does that make sense to you? A program. I take a program. You have to join the program. You pay your membership fee for the program. And this is what you are allotted, access to living quarters for this amount of days, training, teaching. We're teaching you how to, whatever.
Right.
Does that make sense? The package.
Yeah, because the legal system's very slow and unfair in many cases.
I would just make it in a situation that you can do that. You can put your you can create a program, and it, make it an LLC, and then put the properties in the LLC, and then do it just like that.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Now we have a conference to teleconference today. What 6 o'clock? Central time, is it? Okay. All right. So. We already know we are. Oh, so that's at 6 o'clock, me, you, Delmar, and Willie. 6 Central, 7 Eastern my time, and then Robin, it'll be, what, 4 o'clock there? We are?
6. It'll be 3 my
no,
time.
No, where we are. 3 your time. All right. No. Yeah. You sure?
Yeah. 3 hours is 3 hours.
All right, no, it's 7. It'll be 7 for me, 6 for, you know what, I keep on forgetting about Mountain Time. Okay.
So we're meeting at 6 p.m. Right. Eastern Standard Time.
No. We're meeting at 7 Eastern Standard Time, which is 6 p.m. Central Time.
Where did 7 come from?
All right. Yesterday, what did I say? I was going by Delmar's time, which is at Central.
Oh, because he's coming in.
Standard.
So we're doing it at 6 o'clock his time, so it's going to be 7
right,
o'clock
his time.
Your time. 4 o'clock my time, yes.
Right. Yeah, that's it. All right, good. We got it all straight. Okay, yeah. Him and what? Him and Willie are both
Delbert's
at 6.
Delbert's going to be
right.
Wrapping
and I'll
on,
call. I'll reach out. I'll just send reminders. I'll call Delmar and Willie at 30 minutes till.
Okay.
No, before time. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that's it for today on this podcast. What'd you say, Robin?
Too bad we don't have a show tonight. And we've resumed.
Well, that's one of the things we're going
to
talk about tonight because, once again, we the goal is to get to 5 days a week because if we do 5 days a week, we'll have business, daily business, new business where we can generate an income. All right, so that's one of the things we're going to be talking about tonight. Because the radio show is easier to monetize. So, and like,
ooh,
and then,
So Abiding Faith Housing Ministry, we will also be doing, Squat Busters. We're Squat Busters now. We bust squatters out of your house.
And that can be. I'm looking forward to getting the first customer out of that one because that's needed.
Yeah.
That's needed.
Okay.
Okay.
You like that, Delmar?
I'm listening.
Man, they got squatters all over the place.
Who you gonna call? Squad Buster.
Squad Buster. All right. See you guys tonight.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.